Hi everyone. There's a new music video out by Drake that's taking the internet by storm. It was released in late January. It broke the single day streaming record on both Spotify and Apple Music. It's a song that's called God's Plan. Now, I'm not hip enough to know about this on my own, but I do live with a couple of teenagers, one of whom drew my attention to this video. Now, Drake called this music video the most important thing he's ever done in his career. At the beginning of the video, words come up on the screen that say the budget for this video was $990,000+, almost a million, and we gave it all away. Don't tell the studio. And then the video proceeds to show scenes of Drake going around Miami giving stacks of money away. He announces in a busy grocery store that everyone's purchase would be paid for that day. He presents a check to a local fire department and a women's shelter and an after-school program. He sneaks up behind families on the street and hands them stacks of cash. One woman literally fell off of her seat. And this video has captivated the minds and hearts of a generation. They can't get enough of it. Why? Well, because generosity is beautiful. Well, we're hardwired to respond to it. And the reason generosity is beautiful is because it reflects the heart of God. And since you and I were made in the image of God, we also have this innate desire to be generous. It's why our hearts swell and we get emotional when we see it in motion. It's why our hearts grow when we practice it ourselves. It's one of the spiritual practices that most connects us to God. And since we're talking about getting close to God, I thought it would be appropriate to wrap up this series with this subject matter. And it's going to also build a bridge to our March series on vision by talking about the spiritual discipline today of generosity. We've talked about solitude and celebration and fasting and prayer and confession as spiritual practices that help us to draw close to God as we find our chair each day in His Word. And today we're going to talk about the discipline of generosity. Now, to some, that little phrase, discipline of generosity, may sound like an oxymoron. Because in today's world, we often think of generosity as a spontaneous act, not a pre-planned one. And so you give when something moves you or a cause appeals to your emotions. And those things are great. But I believe that our heart is truly changed and closeness with God is truly achieved when our generosity becomes a consistent pattern. It must be cultivated and practiced with ongoing discipline. Like a flower in full bloom, generosity takes our breath away. But we must remember that that flower is only blooming because it's been nurtured and cared for and fed and watered and weeded. It doesn't just happen without disciplined care. Why? Why do you think we need to be so intentional about generosity? Well, here's why. Because the silent soul killer of our generation is greed. It's the natural thing that we're going to feed into. Greed is one of those sneaky sins. It's sneaky because it's very difficult to see in ourselves. When you think of greed, you think of Scrooge sitting at a table with both arms around his money. And you look at that and you say, well, I'm definitely not like that. But there are more subtle forms of greed. In fact, Jesus once said, beware of all kinds of greed. He said there's more than one kind. And here's why it's so sinister. Because most sins you're aware of as you're committing them. Lying, stealing, cheating, gossiping, adultery. I mean, you don't just wake up one day and say, oh my goodness, I've been having an affair for the last 3 months and I just realized it, right? When you're committing most sins, you know that you're doing them. But greed can sneak up on you. I mean, in all my years as a pastor, I've had a lot of people who come and talk to me about overcoming various sins in their lives. But in 25 years of ministry, I've never had one person come in and say, Pastor, I'm really struggling with greed. Can you help me? And yet I believe it's one of the biggest sins, one of the biggest idols of our day. People are in debt up to their eyeballs. We're buying stuff we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't know or care about. Greed is all over the place, but nobody's willing to acknowledge it or deal with it. And so how can we diagnose greed? How can we detect something that hides so well? Well, we detect it by looking at our generosity. Greed can hide itself in our spending, can hide itself even in our saving. But it can't hide itself in our giving. Generosity is like kryptonite to greed. And so today, we're going to talk about generosity as a spiritual discipline. Generosity as a spiritual discipline is just as important as prayer and fasting and reading your Bible. In fact, there's more said in the New Testament about money and material possessions than any of these other disciplines combined. There are some 2,000 verses about how we handle our possessions. One of those verses is in 1 Corinthians 16. And I love this text because Paul gets very practical about the discipline of generosity. So you can turn to 1 Corinthians 16 in your Bible or device. It's in the New Testament, about halfway through. I want to give credit to Larry Osborne and his message, Why Generosity Matters, for some of these thoughts today. And so as you're turning to 1 Corinthians 16, let me give you some of the context of this passage. Here we see Paul providing a set of instructions for an offering that he was going to be taking from the Gentile Christians of Corinth for the Jewish Christians of Jerusalem. Now remember, there was great animosity between the Gentile and the Jewish Christians. Jesus was a Jewish Messiah, but his mission was to reach all people, including the lowly Gentiles in the minds of the Jews. And so some of the early Jewish leaders didn't even want to go to the Gentiles. Even the great apostle Peter, he had to have three dreams from God before he'd even step foot into the house of a Gentile. And when he went to that Gentile's house, the guy got saved, which caused a great ruckus in the early church. Because a whole new wave of Gentiles started coming to Christ, and they started bringing, you know, bacon-wrapped pork tenderloin to the church picnics. And the Jewish believers are like, well, what's going on? We're not sure what to make of this. And so Paul understood that this was an opportunity to express the church's unity in Jesus Christ. And so he decided to take an offering from the Gentile Christians who had been mistreated and to give it to the Jewish Christians who are now struggling in poverty. And so in the process of collecting this offering, he gives the church and us some very helpful instructions about generosity. Now, the other thing that you should know about the context of this passage is that in chapter 15, the chapter just before this one, it ends with one of the most glorious declarations in the whole Bible about the resurrection of Jesus. In fact, you should just flip back and skim it real quick. It's where Paul says the famous words, you know, oh, death, where's your victory? Oh, death, where's your sting? The resurrection has conquered it all. Well, what a gift from God. And so then Paul moves immediately from the resurrection to the collection for the saints. And he's saying essentially, you have been given the most generous gift from God. Now, be generous yourselves to other people. This is the foundation, you see, for all generosity. So, look at 1 Corinthians 16, starting in verse 1. He says, now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you also are to do. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper, so that there will be no collecting when I come. And when I arrive, I will send those whom you accredit by letter to carry your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable that I should go also, they will accompany me. Now, before we get into some of the specifics of the text, I want to talk for a moment about biblical generosity, what it was and what it has become. Osborne frames it this way, how the tithe became a tip, okay? So the Bible talks about giving one way, but we've made it something else in the modern church. So let's talk about three ways that the tithe has become a tip. Here's the first. It's become an option instead of an obligation. So everybody is for giving, but few people anymore think they have to do it, okay? Generosity is an absolutely essential component of the Christian faith. In the Bible, it is not the extra credit package just for those who want an A+. It's the basic expectation for those who just want a C, okay? Now, in the Old Testament, there were a series of tithes, expectations. You know what the word tithe means? It just means one-tenth. Now, we're not under the old law, so these things don't apply to us by the letter, but it's still very important for us to know the principles at play here. So all told, there were about 33% of people's income that would go to the temple. This would go to help the needy. It would go to run the temple. It would run the government, because in those days, the temple and the government were essentially the same. But everybody was expected to tithe somewhere around between 30 and 40%. Now, even though we're not under the old law, I still believe that the tithe, 10%, is a minimum entry requirement to ongoing generosity. It doesn't guarantee generosity, but I like to think of tithing as kind of the training wheels to get there until we're ready to go even above and beyond on our own. The point here is, giving, generosity, is not an option for the Christian. In 1 Timothy 6, in the New Testament, the Bible says, command them to be generous. It's still what God expects of his people. Now, it doesn't say to just apply what you give here at the church. This generosity applies to your entire lifestyle. It applies to the tip that you give to the waiter or waitress in the restaurant. It applies to the way that you negotiate that business deal. One of the ways to spot a lover of Jesus is that they will have a generous disposition. And so generosity is a non-optional aspect of the Christian faith. Here's the second way that the tithe has become a tip. It has gone from what's left over instead of off the top. We give what's left over instead of giving what's off the top. And the Bible is clear that the first one to receive from our paychecks should be God. It all came from God in the first place. And as a sign of our faith in Him, we give back to Him off the top of our income. It's a concept called first fruits. That one of the ways that we show worship and respect to God, one of the ways that we radically declare our allegiance to God, is to give Him the first out of everything that we receive. Proverbs 3:9 says it this way: honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all of your produce. It's obviously a farming term, but it applies no matter what career you're in. But today, it's much more common to see Christians giving to God from their leftovers. For most, it's not until I've cared for all my needs and I've made sure I'm cared for. I have my house, my car, I have my toys, my entertainment, my electronics, my phone, my Netflix, my triple venti soy caramel macchiato. Then I see what's left over and I'll dig around in the bottom of my purse through the old gum wrappers and the hair ties and I'll send then whatever is left God's way. But guys, God doesn't deserve our leftovers in any area of our lives. He deserves off the top. Here's the third. It's become an emotional response instead of a discipline. A lot of our giving is out of emotional response. Now, this isn't bad, but we tend to give to a cause rather than giving to God. And so we'll allow our emotions to drive our giving. We'll give to things that we're passionate about. And listen, we'll also stop giving to things that we lose our passion for. And so sometimes we'll say, here you go, God, I'll give to you. But at the first sign of something that doesn't make me happy or something I don't personally like, I'm pulling it. It's interesting that even in our giving, when we're trying to express faith, we still like a lot of control. And so we're emotion-based givers. And there's been a whole cottage industry that's been created called fundraising around this idea. There are people who have figured out how to push our buttons and motivate us to give, from colleges to hospitals to churches. Show me the picture, tell me the story, you know, get me liquored up on the golf course. It's a fundraising thing. Whatever it is, press my buttons and I'll give to your cause. And again, this isn't always a bad thing. We should respond with our hearts when we become aware of needs around us. But if all our generosity is dependent upon our emotions being touched, frankly, we're leaving too much responsibility to our feelings, which aren't always trustworthy. And so in the midst of all of this cause-based, emotionally driven giving, we've lost the discipline of generosity, which is actually the practice that will begin to change and shape our hearts and to grow our faith over the long term. That's why the Bible promotes what it calls tithes and offerings. Tithing is that regular planned generosity that shapes our heart toward God's heart. And offerings, then, it's different. Those are the over and above moments when a situation comes along that captures our heart or a need that we didn't see coming. Those are the free will offerings. And so one of the reasons that I love this passage in 1 Corinthians is because it shows us how to go away from tipping God to making our giving an ongoing spiritual practice that's going to allow us to draw close to God over the long haul. And so I want to go back to 1 Corinthians 16 and talk about four principles for practicing generosity. Here's the first. Be scheduled and systematic about your giving. It's amazing what we're able to do if we schedule something and make it happen. Exercise, homework, family time, date nights with your spouse. But when it's not scheduled, it usually gets crowded out, right? I mean, every gym is filled in January, but if there's no ongoing plan in place, if you don't have a workout partner or a regular time or such, you have a very slim chance of still being at the gym in August, right? If we don't systematize the important things, urgent things will surely crowd them out. And so Paul gives them a plan. I want you to underline those few words there in verse 2, where he says, on the first day of the week, and just write scheduled and systematic in the margin. I mean, you want to move beyond emotional responses? You need to make it systematic. You'll need to make a plan. Generosity starts with a decision, just like every other important thing. So we need to to upfront choose our priorities and build systematic structure into our lives so that we can assure that what is important happens instead of, you know, just kind of waiting for the mood to strike. Take two guys and a dentist, all right? It sounds like a start of a cheesy joke. One of them, every time he goes to the dentist, he schedules his next trip. The other guy, he waits till he's in the mood to see his dentist. Which guy do you think keeps his teeth in the end, right? It's the guy who builds this into his schedule. This is just basic life skills stuff that we all know, but sometimes we don't apply it to our generosity. In fact, over in 2 Corinthians, Paul adds a little bit more detail when he says this. He says, each of you should give what you've decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Now, there's an intentionality to giving, deciding ahead of time. And it allows us to give cheerfully. You know why? Because we're assuring that our priorities are right. It helps you to give from the top and not the bottom. It helps you to give God the first rather than just giving leftovers, as we just mentioned. So if you're a Dave Ramsey disciple, here's what this might look like. I think we should call you Ramseyites, okay? Go ahead and use the old envelope tool. When you get a paycheck, take God's portion off the top, set it aside in your envelope, and get it ready to give. Now, one of the reasons that we encourage online giving here, an automatic withdrawal here at Grace, is so that you can just lock it in and make sure that generosity to God is a priority in your life. There's no forgetting your checkbook. There's no forgetting to give if you're out of town. You're just deciding up front, this is the kind of person I want to be. We here at Grace have safe and secure methods for you to give on our website, on our app, and at all those places, there's a link to Secure Give where you can set up recurring gifts and that kind of deal. So please look into that if you need to be more systematic in your generosity. Here's the second principle. It's to take personal responsibility for your giving. Again, look at verse 2. He says, on the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper. Just underline those three words that say each of you, and just write personal responsibility. I mean, just fill in your own name here while I fill in mine, because it's as if God is saying in this passage, Derek, you know, or whatever your name, always, each of you, always, without excuse, never an exception, you must be generous. At every stage of your life, in every season of your life, figure out a way to be generous with your resources, each of you. A great example of this is the widow's mite. Matthew 12:41, Jesus points out this woman that's putting less than pennies into the offering plate, but he holds her up as an example of generosity. Why? Because she didn't come up with excuses of why she couldn't give. She gave even in her poverty. Each of you, he says. One of the ways that I think we can do a better job in taking personal responsibility is what I like to call strategic awareness. It's becoming more aware of the needs around us so that our heart can be drawn to generosity. So get involved in Serve Erie Saturday in a few weeks where we invade our city with the love of Christ. Personally go to Haiti, serve in the kids ministry at Grace, or celebrate recovery, where you'll become personally aware of needs. When you volunteer for things like Operation Christmas Child to pack boxes, or when you hear the stories of lives impacted through Emma's footprints, or when you read about, you know, what Mark Erickson is doing, providing used items for people in need through his ministry called A Hand Up, or Ron Paisley's crossover basketball program for inner city youth, or, you know, take your life group down to serve the homeless with the Cross Church in downtown here. Suddenly your awareness is increasing and your heart is expanding. But it's too easy to hide in a corner. But when you see it with your own eyes, something powerful happens when Christians come face to face with needs. And so take personal responsibility for your giving. Each of you do this. It's nobody else's job to nurture that heart. It's your job. Here's the third principle. Give in proportion to your income. Let me read this again in verse 2. He says, on the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper. Just underline that phrase, as he may prosper, and write in proportion to your income in the margin. He's saying that the more you're blessed, the more generous you must become. Now, unfortunately, that's not usually what happens. Statistics say that the richer people get, the less they give. Now, the amount is more, but the percentage-wise, they give proportionally less than the middle class, for example. So it's why percentage giving is so critical. A lot of people say, well, you know, I'll give more when I have more. But if we don't learn to be generous when we have a little, we won't pull it off, I promise you, when you have more. It's a beautiful principle because it levels the field. From the time our kids are little, we can teach them to give away 10 cents for every dollar that they make in their allowance. I have a pastor friend who has one of the highest earning players in the Major League Baseball that attends his church, and he tithes. But he only, this guy who makes a gazillion dollars, he only learned to be a blessing like that because he had incorporated that practice in his life all the way through. Paul lays out the expectation for what God entrusts us with, when God entrusts us with his stuff. He says in 2 Corinthians 9, Paul says this way, you will be made rich in every way so that, okay, we always want to perk up when we hear those words. There's an important transition here. He's about to tell us why God would entrust us with any kind of stuff, any kind of riches. He says, you will be made rich so that, not you can buy a new house, a new car, any of that, so that you can be generous. And here's the problem. Here's the problem with generosity. If you make generosity a priority, you will never be able to keep up with the Joneses. You know how we compare. You know, if you have a job, you start looking around at the people who have the same job as you, and you start comparing stuff. You compare your house and your car and your vacations and so on. This is human nature. Now, if you try to keep up with them, you will never be generous. Do you know why? Because I know a little secret about your peers and colleagues and neighbors that you're trying to keep up with. Here's the secret. They're in debt. They're spending money they don't have. They're living well beyond their means. And in order to keep up with them, you're going to have to do that too. And you and I who follow Jesus, we need to make the decision to live well below our means so that we can be generous. It's one of the clearest statements we can make about where our allegiance lies. Proverbs says, only the fool devours all that he has. But if you're going to live a generous life, guess what? The Joneses are going to win. They'll have the better lawn and the better car and the cooler gadgets. But here's my advice to you. Just declare them the winners. Give them the trophy. Hang the ribbon above their front door. I said do this in your head, right? Because if you do this for real, that's really passive aggressive. Just in your head. Because if you choose the discipline of generosity, you're going to be here and all your peers will be here. But you'll get a couple of cool things in the process. You'll sleep at night, for one. When you get to heaven, you'll have a treasure there that lasts a whole lot longer than a couple decades. But there is a price in this lifetime. And that's why it's a discipline. It's why it's deciding on a percentage to give is a great starting place. Now, there are some of you who aren't doing this, who aren't kind of percentage giving. But you're just a decision away from going on an incredible adventure with God. I know tons of stories of people who just went kind of cold turkey into giving 10% of their income away, and it was no turning back for them. It is a soul-expanding, heart-pounding adventure of generosity that we're all supposed to be on. But there are some of you, for a variety of reasons, that can't start with 10% today, but I want to challenge you to do something. Choose a percentage. Decide to prioritize this and do it. If you're in a rut or a crisis or you're loaded up with debt or whatever, get some help first. We have budget coaches available, folks who've been through the Dave Ramsey course that can help you. But do something to get in the generosity game. And frankly, there are some of you who 10% of your income isn't a faith deal at all for you. Time to up it. Take your heart for a joyride. All right, here's the fourth principle. Give to and through the local church. Paul said, go ahead and apply these principles, take the offering, and then look at verse 3. He says, and when I arrive, I will send those whom you accredit by letter to carry your gift to Jerusalem. Underline that phrase, those to whom you accredit, and just write through the local church in the margin. He says, I'll accompany them myself if I need to. But there's this built-in accountability, you see, in giving to the local church. That the biblical local church, like Grace, has ordained elders and leaders that are recognized. It has guidelines and procedures for ministry, including responsible ways to collect and process and distribute the offerings. It's accountable to God for its finances. Now, obviously, this doesn't prevent some ministries from corruption and shady financial stuff and all that. But here at Grace, we have very tight accounting procedures, including an annual outside audit to make sure that all of our dealings are above board. Now, some of you might disagree with this idea of giving primarily through the local church, and it may sound weird, and I know self-serving and whatever coming from me, but I believe it to my toes, even before I was in pastoral leadership. You know, there are many wonderful organizations and causes to give to, but I just can't get away from this idea that in the Bible that Christians should focus the majority of their generosity to their community of faith, their church. So I would expect believers who call Grace their church home and attend here and are spiritually fed here and are involved in the mission here to not have the majority of their giving going to other organizations. The local church is the hope of the world. It's how God has arranged for the redemption of the planet until he comes back. And he said, to reach the world, I will build my church. Now some would argue, my money's used more effectively if I just send it overseas or give it directly to the poor instead of going through the local church. Let me just address that for a second. First of all, I would never, ever try to dissuade you from trying to give to the poor or other fantastic organizations that serve those in need. Please do. As you may know, I too am very passionate about the concerns of the poor and needy. Kim and I have invested significant, you know, personal time, energy, and money toward individuals and organizations who serve those in need, both locally and around the world. And Grace Church also embodies that same passion. But if the Bible is right that Jesus is the answer to what the world really needs, Jesus is the answer, then the greatest gift that we can give to the poor in our region and beyond is Jesus. And so by continuing to increase the army of people who love him and are passionate to serve him and to give to him, the bigger that army gets, the more resources that will be unleashed to serve those in need. But more than just resources, the more gospel relationships that will be formed to begin real grassroots changed toward efforts like poverty and so forth. So we will talk much more about this starting next week as we get into our 3-year vision initiative and how some of these ideas on generosity will actually play out in the near future. We're going to be announcing this vision initiative next week that's going to require $2.3 million above and beyond our existing budget to accomplish. It's going to address areas that we believe God's calling us to address in our homes, in our sites, in our city, and around the world. But in order to take a big swing at the plate like this, God has to continue to press the value of generosity deep into the hearts of those of us who are part of his church. Every mechanism in our society, from entertainment to business to advertising to social media, is set up to push us towards selfishness and greed. You need this. You deserve this. The Bible is set up to push us towards selflessness and generosity. And in order to push ourselves toward a biblical mindset, we have to discipline ourselves to be generous. And so today we said that the 4 principles that will help you to practice generosity are this: to be scheduled and systematic about your giving, to take personal responsibility for your giving, to give in proportion to your income, and to give to and through the local church. Now, let's talk about a simple next step that you can practice this week. I want to challenge you to spend some chair time this week and ask God, what is his desire for your generosity? I'm convinced that if we will seek God and ask him questions like this and then do what he says, that things like $2.3 million or $5 million or $20 million will be nothing for a God who owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. A great starting place to facilitate this conversation with God about generosity is to begin by making a list in your journal or your Bible of all the ways that God has been generous with you. The foundation for your generosity is remembering God's generosity to you first. And here's the thing. At first, the practice of generosity might feel like a chore, but it is ultimately the gateway to the most fulfilling life possible on this earth. I'm completely convinced of this. Do you realize that giving isn't just some obligation that God, you know, this big killjoy in heaven, demands of us so that we won't have any fun on earth? No. The generous life is a better life. I mentioned it at the beginning that Drake said that this video was his most fulfilling project of his lifetime. Well, of course it was. The generous life is the better life. And don't take Drake's words for it. Jesus, the smartest man who ever lived, said it this way: it is more blessed to give than to receive. He didn't say it's better to give or you ought to give. He said it is more blessed to give. This word blessing is a word used to describe the good life. A life of true happiness, a life we all want. And he says it's satisfying to receive, but it's way, way more satisfying to give. But we must nurture and cultivate and discipline ourselves to be generous, and soon our hearts will follow. And so over these last 2 months, we've taken a modern look at some ancient disciplines that will draw us close to God. And I pray that these practices will be part of your Christian faith until we see him face to face. God bless you guys.